Blog Talk Radio.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to Movie Addict Headquarters with your host, Betty Jo Tucker, author of Confessions of a Movie Addict, right here at www.blogtalkradio.com.
Toto, I have a feeling we're not in Kansas anymore. That's right, Dorothy. This is Movie Addict Headquarters. You don't have to be a movie addict to visit here, but if you are one, it's definitely the place for you. I'm your host, Betty Jo Tucker, speaking to you from beautiful but very chilly Pueblo, Colorado, on this ninth day of February, 2010. We're in for a real treat today, folks, for our guest is Cammie King Conlon, who played Rhett and Scarlett's beautiful little daughter in Gone with the Wind. Although only 5 years old when given the role of Bonnie Blue Butler, Cammie still remembers what it was like to work with star Clark Gable and director Victor Fleming. Her delightful book, Bonnie Blue Butler, A Gone with the Wind Memoir, was released last year and coincided with the 70th anniversary of that classic film. Of course, when Cammie walked onto the soundstage back in 1939, she probably had no idea Gone with the Wind would become such a cinematic phenomenon. The film went on to win 10 Oscars and has been screened millions of times throughout the world. It's still going strong on DVD. What a pleasure it is to welcome you to Movie Addict Headquarters, Cammie.
Thank you so much, Betty Jo. I'm delighted to be talking to a real movie addict, yes.
Well, I think you probably are one, and you'll probably get a chance to talk to more movie addicts as the show
I'm looking forward to that. Thank you for having me on.
Well, it's an honor to have you here, Cammie, and I simply have to let you know that the part of Gone with the Wind that impressed me and stayed with me the most actually involved Bonnie Blue Butler. So that's one of the reasons I'm very excited to talk with you. But before starting the interview, let's see if Nikki Starr and Jazz Shar are ready to help with the show. Nikki, I understand you've had a chance to read Cammie's wonderful memoir. Would you mind telling her what you enjoyed the most about it?
I would be happy to. First of all, thank you very much for sending the book. I loved it. And I was really impressed with your mother.
Yeah.
Not the way that you wrote it even, but just how she was, especially for the times,
yeah.
Just such
She's
a strong
the book.
Woman. And yeah, I just
she
loved it.
The book. You're right, Nikki. You're so absolutely right. Thank you.
Well, I remember that part of the book very well, too. And there was one section, Cammie, where you called your mother the Queen of Prussia. In fact, it was a little essay that you had written, right,
yes.
About her?
Yes.
And that's the image, I think. That mm-hmm. was really a terrific image for her. And
yeah,
she,
thank you.
And, of course, later on in the show, we'll find out what she had to do with with Bonnie Blue Butler. And but I do need to ask Nikki also, because she is our chat wrangler, is our chat room ready to go? And do you think there are any Wendy's there? I think that's what we call Gone with the Wind fans, Cammie.
I do.
Yes.
We call them Wendy's, yes.
Wendy's.
Yes, the chat room is ready to go, and we're just very excited to have you here.
Thank you, Nikki.
And thanks, Nikki, for doing such a great job with the chat room. And thanks to the chatters. We really appreciate you. And as always, we appreciate all our other listeners and Jazz for being with us to co-host the show. Jazz, I understand you just finished reading Cammie's book. Would you like to tell her what you thought about it?
Absolutely. I thought, first of all, that I was wishing it was longer. It's such a fascinating story. And dealing with such an iconic film, I realized the film was important, but I found what I really enjoyed a lot was the personal stuff, the family stuff. You already mentioned about your mother, but the very sad story about your sister, and also some of the outside things that really caught my attention, like other people telling you that they were you in later years, which I just find hilarious. But I liked all the little personal touches and how it affected both your family and your personal life growing up, and I thought that was very nice. It was very well done.
Well, Jess, thank you so much. That's very sweet.
Actually, I agree. Go ahead.
Actually, I thank my publisher, Cypress House, for that, because I had the Gone with the Wind memoir, and it was very slim. Of course, as my son pointed out to me, Mom, you're only 5. The publisher suggested that I then add the personal. So that's why it got a little bit bigger, but still not a tome.
No, it was just, as I was mentioning to Nikki and Jazz before the show started, I think that it's just the right size for busy people today who are on the go, and they can, you know, take it with them and read on the bus or, you know, while they're sitting and waiting in line somewhere. And I loved this memoir.
Thank you so much.
And Cammy, the scenes, as I mentioned, involving Bonnie Blue Butler, I thought were the most poignant of the entire film. And I just can't believe that I'm actually talking with the actress who played that very, very important part, although it wasn't a lengthy role in the movie. Now, Jazz, why don't you start the ball rolling with our first questions for Cammy?
Absolutely. Cammy, it was already mentioned that you were 5 years old at the time, and I know the process in Hollywood has evolved over the years for things like casting, but how did you come to be cast in the role of Bonnie Blue Butler? How did you get that part? Did you already know people there, or was there a casting audition process, or how did that work?
The auditions were published in the paper, I think the regular paper, and my mother took me to the studio, and I think there were just two other little girls. I have just this one flash memory of being in a room and three of us were all dressed in long, you know, costume sort of things. Somewhere there's my audition, I think down in the archive, the Selznick archive at the University of Texas. I once had it, you know, a couple of pages of, although I couldn't read, you know, Mother would have taught me the lines and I would have said them. So that's how I got the part. What I mention in the book is that in 1939, Los Angeles was a company town. The movies were the industry. This was before World War II.
Oh, sure.
Aircraft, yeah. So, you know, everything was kind of doable. It was a smaller city, and it just didn't seem that big a deal to go out to a studio.
Wow. And when you got there, was there any preparation? Can you walk us through that a little bit, or did they pretty much just throw you onto the set and, you know, here's the lines you have to say, go, or was there some sort of a training and rehearsal period?
How it worked, Mother brought me to the set every day, and she did my hair. I don't know how Selznick got around the unions with this, but he said he didn't want me to have corkscrew curls, so Mother did my curls. And if you look at the movie closely, I have stick straight hair. You can see the curls coming out. But anyway, as she was doing the curls, she'd teach me my lines for the day. And then I'd go out, and I don't remember this process, but I assume Mr. Fleming, you know, said movie. All I knew at 5 was I was just doing what people told me to do. You know, I had no concept I was in a movie. I thought I was just doing, you know, I just thought, I didn't think about it.
Did they make you do it over and over again? I'm curious, were there a lot of takes? Do you recall that, or was it mostly
you did the line and they were done? My mother told me one thing. She said there was one scene, and I can't tell you which one, where they were doing a lot of takes. And Clark Gable said, "Come on, fellows, let's wrap this up. The baby's tired."
That's
the kind of guy he was, according to her.
That was so cute. And did Well, you did have to learn how to ride a horse, didn't you?
They taught, yes, the studio sent me to a stable in West Los Angeles about a month before I started filming. I could ride, they taught me side saddle and English, and even I could ride a circus pony, bareback.
Wow, like 5 years
old. Yeah, that
was
the best part of the movie, of course.
Holy cow.
Well, you mentioned Victor Fleming, and I enjoyed so much some of the things that you put in your book about him. Especially memorable is what he did with you when you forgot your lines. Can you tell? I don't want us to give everything away from the book, but can you fill us in a little bit about what he said to you when you forgot your lines?
My mother told me later that morning when she was doing my hair, I just wasn't paying attention or being kind of bratty or whatever. So we got on the set, and I, again, can't tell you which scene this was, but I fluffed my lines. I didn't know them. And I just remember being very ashamed. That was just shame. You know, I knew that much. So a flash image. And Mother said what happened was Victor Fleming came over to where I was and knelt down so that we were eye level. And he said, "Cammy, you know, I have a little girl your age." And he did, Victoria Fleming, and I went to school with her for a year. Right. So he said, "I have a daughter here." And he said, "The reason I come to the studio and work hard every day is so I can take care of my little girl. And Cammy, do you see all the men here around the crew?" "Yes, Mr. Fleming." "Well, they all have little boys and girls, too, and that's why they come and work. And, Cammy, when you don't know your lines, we can't take care of our children."
Oh.
I mean, God, that would destroy you for life.
Oh, well, that was almost as bad as the story is about when Margaret O'Brien was in a movie and she was supposed to cry.
Oh.
Have you heard this story? And the,
I can't
the
remember
director,
what they told her.
They told her that her dog had died.
Oh, yes.
To get her to have the real tears. So Victor Fleming was a little more sophisticated.
Yeah, well,
than
I got it. I was so ashamed. I remember that. I knew what I'd done was wrong, and I never forgot my lines again.
Well, what an interesting director he was. I can't believe that he did in that same year, The Wizard of Oz also.
Yeah. Isn't
1939.
Isn't
what
amazing?
A year for movies. My gosh, I was trying to remember some of them. Now, of course, I was very, very young then, like you were, but there were films like Stagecoach, Wuthering Heights, Gunga Din, Ninotchka, Love Affair, and then, of course, Wizard of Oz and Gone with the Wind, all in 1939. And a lot of film buffs think that is the greatest year of all.
I've heard that over
Hollywood.
And over again. Yeah. I think it's interesting that this year the Academy decided to nominate 10 films for Best Picture because that's what it was in 39, 10
that's
films.
That's right.
Yeah.
However, I think we'll find it hard to pick 10 films. That
yes.
was great, just the 10 films in 1939.
And it's going to be a very long program.
It is going to be. Well, Cammy, what do you remember being the most fun about making Gone with the Wind, about your part in
the
Gone
pony,
with the Wind?
The pony.
The pony.
Yes. And, well, yes, like every little girl wants her own pony. I mean, it just made me feel so important. And I loved it, and I loved writing. It was wonderful.
Oh, and did you get to keep that pony?
Oh, gosh, no. No.
No.
And I wished I'd kept up my riding lessons, my equestrianship, but we were living in the city, and it wasn't easy to get out to a stable, you know, to keep that up, so I didn't.
Well, you did have a scare, though, about the pony when you were making the movie, didn't you? They brought in another pony, I think.
Well,
I remember.
Yeah, we want to tell everything, huh?
Well, not everything. We can leave that. We can leave out whatever you would like to leave out.
Okay, well, the pony, apparently the pony forgot his lines. I don't know. He was acting up. he was doing something he wasn't supposed to do, and the trainer came and took him away. Her, I don't know why I called her Polly. And so I didn't know that the horse had a stand-in. So lo and behold, they bring another little black Shetland pony out, and that's what I'm supposed to do the scene with. And I can now can hear my pony in the stables, which is right off the set, whinnying and kicking. And I don't like this, you know, stand-in. And I start to cry.
Oh,
and
dear.
So they just have to shut down the set for that day.
Oh, so you had that, and then did it take very long for you to understand what was going on, or did you just?
I think all of this later was explained to me or talked about. We didn't talk about it much. I mean, there's a lot of things I could have asked Mother that I never did, because I didn't go on into the show business. It wasn't part of my life, and. You know, it just sort of lay there. It just sort of was there. Now I wish I'd known more, as I said.
Well, sure, but you did a remarkable job of actually doing some research, too, about what happened at the studio there and getting some of the archives and that kind of thing, which really added a lot to the book.
Yes, isn't it wonderful? For me, it's just so amusing to think that the David O. Selznick archive is down at the University of Texas. I mean, somehow I don't see Selznick being a Texan, you know?
No.
I don't see him sitting down with George W., for instance. You know, I don't know. But I asked his son, Danny, how that happened, and he said many universities and institutes bid on the archive, of course, would love to have it. But the University of Texas was the only one that said, we will catalog it and make it available to the public, you know, which is an enormous job. I mean, and so if you write them, they are immediate and helpful, and it's just wonderful.
Well, it's good that they're doing that so that we can have some way to get all of this information. I think I should check with Nikki now to see if there are any questions or comments from the chat or any callers. I think John P. McCarthy was planning on calling in, and I'm not sure if any of the numbers here are his. Nikki, what do you have for us?
Hi, no, he hasn't called in yet, but the chat room is just very happy that she is here.
Good.
And George, that's actually Jazz's wife. She said the book was charming and she just loved it. So.
That was sweet.
And I hope everybody's getting into the chat, by the way, because I have been unable to do so today. So I'm not in there with you because I'm having technical difficulties.
Yeah,
plus
we
I got
do have
knocked off the air in the middle of the interview. So.
Yep.
No, we had technical problems.
Well, Gremlin,
I do have a quick question.
Is
that
right?
Nikki.
Sure.
I was just wondering, how come you didn't stay in show business?
Yes. I think I liked it well enough. And right after that, Gone with the Wind, I did the voice for the young Feline in Bambi. Mm-hmm. Although Feline wasn't released till a couple years later. It was the end of 39 or 40 when I did that. And then I did try out for another part, and I sort of remember it was going to be Men in White. It was an MGM film. And I came down with the chicken pox.
Oh,
and my mother and dad's marriage was breaking up, and she decided that she was going to be the breadwinner and not me. She wanted me to have a normal childhood. And I bless her for that, because I had a wonderful childhood.
Mm-hmm.
So
good for her.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Yeah. And she just, it was too much, you know, too hard. And she did, even on the Gone with the Wind set, she would kind of scold the crew because they loved to spoil me.
Because you were the most precious thing ever.
A little girl loves being spoiled and got presents. I remember they gave me a tea set. And mother said that it was too grown up for me, and she would give it to my sister, which she did. And I took exception to that. But, you know, we just had our little minor.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, but you got a pony out of the deal for a little while, so that's always a plus.
That's
know,
true.
There are two more questions right quick in the chat room that shouldn't take her very long. I loved when she talked about having to wear the mask, okay, and that even when they put it on her face, she had little tears on there.
Yes.
And then the other, if she wants to talk about how she fell off the horse and the mask part, and then what does she remember about Clark Gable, which I know I loved. I don't want to blow the story, but her memories of Clark Gable and then about the mask and her falling off the horse. Those are the two other questions in the chat.
Sure. How the horse, the jumping the fence and everything worked. I could ride very well because they taught me, and I could jump, but they did not let me jump.
Oh.
So I rode, and then they put my stand-in on the horse, and he did the jump. My stand-in was a little man. And then they laid me back on the ground to be dead. So it was all edited, so it looked like one fluid motion, the riding, jumping, falling, and Gable coming to pick me up. And I have some black and white stills, and you very clearly can see there's a line under my neck where the mask is. And then the more I think about it, was that on me for that scene, or was it just a dummy he picked up, you know?
Oh.
Yeah, so I never don't know that.
Well, that's interesting. I was wondering about that, too, when I was reading your memoir. You sure can't tell from the picture that's included in the book whether it is you or but that was something that none of us would have known, you know, that there
no
that,
no I've done a lot of events with the two guys who both played Bo. There's Mickey Kuhn, who was 7 year old Bo and went on to have a great acting career, and Patrick Curtis, who was infant Bo. And we have a lot of fun together. We've done a lot of stuff together. So when I mentioned this mask thing at one of my talks, I said, you know, I just wonder why they didn't just use a dummy. And the two guys chimed up, they did. You know?
Oh, no.
Yeah.
Take that a couple of ways, so we might want to take it the nicer
exactly.
way.
Exactly.
That's right.
Well, I took it the way they meant it, yes.
Nikki's other question was a really good one that I think a lot of us would like to hear. Even though you were 5 years old at the time, what memories remain from you? What impressions of Clark Gable? Because he was just such an iconic figure. And what do you recall of spending time with him?
I wish, of course, that I recalled more. I felt like I was with a nice daddy. That's exactly. How it was. He treated me like he would a little girl, his own little girl, you know. It was as comfortable as being with my own dad or an uncle. So he was a genuine guy, you know. Mother said he was the sort of man that all the men on the crew just thought was a great guy, and of course the women were swooning to death, you know. And so that's my memory. I wish I had more, of course.
Well, I was really taken with a comment that you included in your book from an interview, I think, that Clark Gable gave about working with you on Gone with the Wind. He says that he thinks that he did his best acting.
Oh, yeah.
With you. That is what a wonderful thing for him to say, and I think he was right.
About me, not actually with me, but that, yeah, isn't that amazing? Yeah.
Yes, and so it must have meant a lot to him, those scenes with you. And
I wish I'd seen him later. We just never connected.
That's too bad. I think John is on the line here. I'm going to just give a little click and see if this is John. Hello, is this John P. McCarthy?
It is. Hi, Betty Jo.
Oh, John, thank you so much for calling and for putting me in touch with Cammie. She's just written such a wonderful book and been so delightful here on the show. Say hi to her and tell her what you think about her memoir.
Hello,
hi,
John.
Cammie.
John.
Great to hear your voice.
Oh, it's so sweet of you to call. Thank you.
Oh, I'm so happy, and I really enjoyed the memoir, and I agree with what Nikki and Jazz and Betty Jo have said about everything they've said about it. What I love about it is how your great sense of humor comes through in the in the book.
Yeah, that means so much of me to hear from you because you're such a good writer yourself.
Oh, thank you.
Yes, and may I just mention to Betty Jo and Jazz and Nikki and the audience that John and my son were kids together and went to high school together.
That's right.
John's dad was my first husband's best friend and partner. So it's so sweet to hear your voice.
I've known you my whole life.
Yes,
and you know, one of the great things about the book too, and that hasn't come up, is when you talk about your stepfather, Dr. Kalmus.
Yes.
I mean, I found that so fascinating because I remember my parents mentioning, because they knew you in college, and I guess my mom knew you in high school as well.
Yes.
Because
you
went to high school with my mom, and he was the inventor of Technicolor, is that right?
Yes. Yes.
Wow.
He was huge. I mean, it was staggering, stunning. He filled, you know, you hear about people who just fill a room or just magnetic. And adored mother, thank God, and likewise, and was wonderful to my sister and me. He was very late in life to get a family, a ready-made family. He was in his 60s, 67 when mother married him.
Right.
And he just didn't know anything about that, you know. But we all did very well. He was volatile, you know. He had a temper. He was brilliant. Oh, we know that. You know, he not only had that scientific brain to invent Technicolor, but he was able to be a businessman.
Mm-hmm.
And run the company and bring it to England and bring it to France and Italy for a while. Amazing.
Well, those of us who love those Technicolor movies have owe him a debt of gratitude. Because,
Don't we?
Oh, absolutely. And well, John, it's just so nice of you to call in. Would you like to stay for the rest of the show? And
absolutely.
Feel free to chime in whenever you the spirit moves you. And again, I want to thank you so much for letting me know about Cammie and about her wonderful memoir. Speaking of your memoir, Cammie, why did you decide to write it?
It was funny. I was taking a creative writing course at College of the Redwoods right here in Fort Bragg, believe it or not. And we had a just a brilliant teacher. What an editor. And she's the one that said, well, why don't you write some of these chapters? Why don't you write something? And so I started writing, so I got started, and then I finished the Gone with the Wind part. And then I tried for a year, you know, to get an agent or to sell it or do something, and so then I just forgot about it. It, you know, it wasn't. And then my friend that goes to the movies with me every Sunday, you see, I'm an addict too.
I knew it.
I go with Dixie every Sunday. I dedicated the book to her, Dixie Ship. About every 6 weeks, she'd say, Cammie, what about your Gone with the Wind? Cammie, why don't you catch him? Yeah. So finally, I got it together and went to a publisher.
Well, we're certainly glad that you did. And am I correct? It did come out last year.
Last May, exactly.
Last May. And where can our listeners obtain a copy of Bonnie Blue Butler a Gone with the Wind memoir.
Well, bless you, if they go on cypresshouse.com, that's the publisher, and there's an online catalog. Cypresshouse.com, yeah.
Yeah, we should find the URL and put that right in the chat for the people listening live, too.
So that would be Cypress House, C-Y-P-R-U-S-H-O-U-S-E.
No, like the tree, C-Y-P-R-E-S-S, Cypress.
CypressHouse.com. CypressHouse.com. And I think they can order a book through an email address, too. Isn't that correct?
If they want to email me, John, you'll love this email, scarletsbaby@gmail.com.
How perfect.
That's what I used, I think.
Scarlet's Baby. There's two T's in Scarlet.
Yes.
Now, over the years, you must have run into a lot of fans at various times over the years staying involved with the film. You share a lot of great anecdotes in the book, but maybe if you could share a couple things with us. What are the questions you often get asked by Gone with the Wind fans or some of the more interesting things that people would approach you about?
Well, there's really about 10 questions and you know, and we all hit them, and that's what the women, of course, and when I was a little girl, my mother's friends, the most important question was, what was it like to kiss Clark Gable?
Right.
And then, I don't know, when I was a young married, young matron, and I was supposed to be cleaning the house. I think I was going to vacuum or something. And I turned on the TV to keep me company, and they were showing Gone with the Wind. And I thought, well, I'm sure not going to watch that again. And then, of course, I got sucked in. I sat down next to the vacuum cleaner, and I sat down and I watched. And all of a sudden, as a young married woman, I see Gable. I see him holding me, picking me up, kissing me, and I thought, oh, my God, to have been held and kissed and put to bed by Clark Gable at the age of 5 is one of life's cruel tricks. I just could. So that's why. And then I got why women were swooning about it. So that was, what was it like? What do you remember? How did you fall off the horse? Did you get hurt? Let me see. What was Vivian Leigh like? Just very general questions. Nobody ever asked, like, well, did you go, were you on location? Did you film it in the South? Where did you film it? You know, how did they keep the horses around and stuff like that?
That's interesting.
Betty Jo?
Yes.
Just so you know, Nikki wanted me to inform you that her son, Matt Conlon, is on line 7.
Oh, my God!
Oh. Well, let's put him on.
Oh, Butterbee?
Hey!
Butterbee! I can't believe it! Hi, darling.
Well,
it's
I'm snowed in Chicago, and I thought, well, this is a perfect opportunity to listen to my mom talk about her book.
Oh,
How do you think she's doing?
She's doing great. She's doing great, and it's so much fun to hear John's voice. You know, he and I haven't seen each other in 20 plus years.
Oh,
yes, hi, Matt. Nice to
hear John.
You.
Good to hear you too, bud. Great. I'm doing great. Doing great.
Good.
Now, John, I want you to promise that you're going to go to the Loyola reunion May 22nd in L.A.
I do. I have plans to go to my high school reunion, yes.
Yes. I'm going to just go
decades.
So I can see everybody. Isn't that
As
great?
Do I. I think Mom is more excited about our high school reunion than I am.
I am.
Well, how do you feel about your mom being an actress that appeared in Gone with the Wind and such a beautiful little actress?
Well, I'll tell you the scope of this. Somebody just asked me this. I work in the theater, and like in 1977, I remember going to the Oscar rehearsals. I got invited. Marty Pesetta, who was a school chum of ours, of John and mine at Loyola, his dad directed the Oscars that year. And I remember sitting in this room, and sitting over to the side with her agent was Olivia de Havilland. And I thought, oh, I wonder if I could introduce myself to Olivia de Havilland. And so I did. You know, this little kid, I walked right up and I said, Ms. de Havilland, you don't know me, but I'm Cammie King's son. And she goes, Cammie King, you're Matt. And she knew all about us and couldn't believe it and was so excited. And that just proves to me that, you know, as huge a film as Gone with the Wind was, the scope of it, that it really was a small family.
Yeah,
oh,
was it, yeah.
Yeah,
with a family.
Yeah, it really was.
That's a great point, Matt. We were at the 50th anniversary. Ted Turner brought 12 of us from Hollywood, and we had Butterfly McQueen with us at that time. And she said, you know, Mr. Selznick only picked nice people, or she made this, she of all people, you know, because she had problems with him. But she felt that we all were quality people. That's what she said. And like a family, like you said, Matt.
Yep.
And
well,
here we're having
really
a little
true.
And here we're having a little reunion here now, and I think that's great. And I was also curious, Cammie, about and Matt, please feel free to stay for the remainder of the show. We're just so glad that you called. But
yes.
Now I want to know, what's the most interesting thing, Cammie, that happened to you during these anniversary celebrations?
Ah, my gosh. Well, you know, they didn't start bringing the movie out for all these hoop-de-doo things until the 50th anniversary, and Ted Turner had recently acquired the MGM library, and we're told it was one of his favorite movies. And so he planned a recreation of the 39 premiere in Atlanta, and now it's 89.
Gosh.
And well, to see the to meet all the cast was just extraordinary for me, because I had been away from everything. To be treated like a movie star, you would have thought I was Greer Garson or somebody. The kids don't even know who Greer Garson was. You would have thought I was,
Ava Gardner.
Yeah, that one.
Ava Gardner's a good choice, yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, you mentioned a couple of the child actors, similar to what Betty Jo was asking, that you talked to later on. But I was curious, over the years after you grew up into adulthood, did you stay in touch with any of the rest of the cast or the producers, people involved with Gone with the Wind over the years?
I didn't. No, I was definitely out of the loop. Mickey Kuhn was still acting. Patrick Curtis and I kind of were doing the parochial school route, kind of had maybe mutual friends, might have heard something or the other. But really it was this 50th that galvanized us all. And my one memory, the best memory, is that the premiere was going to be, was a late December night. It was the coldest night on record since 1939, honest to God. And we're going to go from the Omni International Hotel to the theater for the re-screening. And we have about 8 limousines with us, the cast, and we are preceded by flashing lights and police motorcycles and sirens, and we are whizzed through the city of Atlanta for a movie. Can you stand it for a movie?
Gosh.
And the guys were really getting off on it. I really thought that was too much. Then we get there, and it's so cold, as I told you, and there must be 300 people outside the theater waiting for us. That's when I got the impact of it.
Then you knew what you were involved in.
Yeah, they were. So when I go to the South, I want to tell you, I am beloved. It's like the Blessed Mother coming. You know, I'm just an icon. I come home, it's hard when people treat me like a normal person. I'm revered. The whole cast, Gone with the Wind, is so treasured in the South. It's so cherished. It's so part of their everything.
Absolutely. And do they have these anniversaries? Well, you said they didn't start until the 50th anniversary.
They have a lot of them. If the studio, let's see, did we have the 60th? Yeah, I think we did something on the 60th. And then, of course, the 70th just happened in December, back again in Atlanta. And then there are other wonderful, for instance, the Clark Gable Foundation is in Cadiz, Ohio, where he lived as a child for a while, his home. Did you know that, Cadiz, Ohio?
No,
so they have wonderful special weekends. And then we have the Gone with the Wind Museum in Marietta, outside of Atlanta. And we have Tara, we have the Jonesboro Museum, also in Georgia. And I haven't got it right, Tara something, Tara. And then there's Tara in Texas, that's Jefferson, Texas. And Bobby Hardy's having me in a big hoop-de-doo in April of this year. So things go on all the time somewhere.
You mentioned how beloved the film is in the South, but obviously it's not just the South. I mean, it's one of the classics of all time. You've seen it probably as much as anybody, if not more, and you experienced it. What do you think it is about Gone with the Wind that made it so iconic and so popular over such a long period?
Yeah, John, and I get asked that a lot. Well, don't they go back to story, story, story?
Yes.
The book was so beloved, you know. And I just think there's something magical about that strange love affair and all the tensions going on. The other thing is, I think you have to credit Mr. Selznick. He was just,
he was just
obsessed by it. But I recently found out there was 1 million feet of film.
Wow.
Can you imagine?
Oh my gosh. Well, he did. He just really put his whole heart and soul to making sure that we got to see that gorgeous movie. And Cammie, I am sorry to say our time is almost up. We definitely should have scheduled a longer show. We've got a number of callers that we haven't been able to put on the line, and
we've done enough, Betty.
You've been so terrific, and thanks so much for being here today. And we all wish you the best of luck with your lovely book.
Well,
and make sure everybody gets a copy of that book. Please get out and get it. We read it. We enjoyed it. It is a fabulous read.
And may I thank my son and John both for calling. That means so much to me.
I wouldn't miss it. Wouldn't miss it.
Okay. And Betty Jill, thank you so very much. And
it's been our great pleasure. And we're so happy that John and Matt did call in. So this is Betty Jo Tucker giving a big shout out to the folks at Blog Talk Radio for all their support in connection with this show, and of course to Nikki and Jazz for everything they do to make the show so much fun. We thank our callers, our chatters, and other listeners, and we hope you enjoyed today's show as much as we enjoyed bringing it to you. Please come back on Tuesday, February 16th at 4 p.m. Eastern Time, when our guest will be Tony Luke Jr., star and co-writer of The Nail, an inspiring film about a disgraced former boxer who finds redemption by helping an abused boy and his mother. In the meantime, don't you forget to check out our movie reviews at realtalkreviews.com. That's R-E-E-L, realtalkreviews.com. Now here's the talented A.J. Daniels to take us out with a song we dedicate to all our Blog Talk Radio listeners, and today especially to Cammie King Conlon.